Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy, powered by the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation.
You never know what could happen during the session of the Oklahoma legislature, but one thing is a sure bet. The supermajority will zero in on a boogeyman to help whip up the culture wars and distract from lawmakers' fealty to corporate interests at the expense of workaday Oklahomans. This year's target appears to be trans Oklahomans. We haven't yet sorted through all the proposed bills, but it's clear the likes of Republicans Jim Olson, Nathan Dom, and David Bullard have been busy dreaming up ways to criminalize healthcare that doesn't fit their white Christian nationalist worldview. Their proposals, as you might imagine coming from this rogues gallery, represent caveman thinking at its worst, narrow-minded, bigoted, and just plain asinine, not to mention infringing on individual liberties. For this week's ObserverCast, we invited Freedom Oklahoma's Executive Director Nicole McAfee to join us to help sort through the insanity and to strategize what we can all do to help protect Oklahomans' rights. Nicole, it's great to have you from your far-flung destination spot right now, but welcome aboard. Welcome back. This is your first time back in your Freedom Oklahoma role, I think.
It is. Thank you so much for having me.
We're really glad we could get you because, you know, there's no better organization to comment on these on this legislation. And so we know you're very busy because of it. So...
So what's your count on the number of bills? I'm not entirely sure.
I think that we are up to six anti-trans bills filed so far. We expect a few more in the days ahead. Most of what we've seen have been different iterations of bans on best practice medical care for trans people, anywhere from bans for people under 18 to people under the age of 26. But we've also seen a few other trends that we expect to pop up during the session, including things that would ban chosen names and correct pronouns in school settings. And so we expect to see more sort of attempts to limit educators from providing affirming environments and make schools an increasingly dangerous place for trans young people.
You know, I would like to think that most members of the legislature would not be thrilled to be voting on this sort of thing, but I can imagine that a lot of them would vote for these proposals because they think politically they sort of have to. Is that your sense, or do you think that we really have that many sort of narrow-minded folks, you know, the kind of folks who could look through a keyhole with both eyes?
I would like to think that we've got a bigger portion of people who could find some political courage, though I know that for trans people who've been paying attention especially, there's not a lot of hope of that. As we sit right now, there's not a single returning member of the Oklahoma legislature who has voted against any anti-trans bill in the last several years, including the most extreme, which we saw during the special session in SB 3XX, which was meant to be sort of a de facto ban on best practice medical care for trans kids by banning OU Health from providing gender-affirming care to minors or risk losing a large amount of much-needed funding. And so I think it's really hard to feel hopeful about where we are and hopeful about any of these folks showing some level of courage and open-mindedness in this space when they haven't given us an example that suggests that they might do that. But I think it just makes it increasingly important that more people, especially people beyond the trans and gender nonconforming community, engage around this fight.
So we haven't had a chance since the special session legislation came through to really talk about what it means to deny gender affirming care for minors. Can you kind of talk about that issue a little bit for us? Give us some background. And really, I want people to understand like how the statistics, how these are life-saving in so many ways, life-saving care. Could you kind of lay the territory for us on this issue?
Absolutely. So most of these bans are written to be really expansive in the type of care they ban, especially when read by attorneys for medical providers who are worried about what the interpretation of this is as it relates to litigation they might face. And so when SB 3XX passed, it banned most every type of affirming medical care that was physical. It left a little room maybe for mental health care. And it did so with an emergency. So the attorneys at OU Health determined that that meant providers could not even help with continuity of care. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of doctors at the Roy G. Biv facility, which was the largest gender-affirming care provider for people under 18 in the state and had worked for several years to sort of get to that space, who stepped outside of their roles and worked with other providers on the ground to help fill in some of those gaps. And even then it was imperfect. But it means that there's disruption in hormone care and things that are really precarious and require a lot of regular check-in and testing to make sure that people's balance is correct, because we know how much that can impact somebody's mood. It's a disruption of puberty blockers for a lot of people, which is something that I know the legislature sort of held up as an example of harm without really understanding what puberty blockers do, which is delay puberty for a lot of people. And some people decide that then isn't right for them and they stop puberty blockers and go through sort of puberty as they would have normally, just at a later time. And for some people, it's literally one of the most sort of affirming and helpful disruptions of suicidality, because it stops their body from sort of further changing into something that doesn't reflect accurately who they are. And so while the conversation in legislative spaces focuses a lot on the idea of gender affirming surgeries for trans people, without even touching the idea that there are a lot of cisgender people that undergo gender affirming surgeries as well, really what a lot of this care is just things that help young people buy a little of the time they need to determine who they are and to make sure that their sort of body matches what they know to be true. And it's all done within best practice medical care guidance with the support of every major medical association. And it's a really scary future to think about what happens if all of these young people, so many of whom we got calls from in the days after SB 3XX, who were trying to figure out where else they can find care in the state, suddenly couldn't find care anywhere in the state at all.
So I guess I feel like we needed to find some terms here, right? So like, and you know, this was like cultural theory 101 when it came to gender in grad school. You know, sex and gender are not the same thing. And so I think, you know, it's really unfortunate to hear gender affirming care become such a scapegoat for really just helping kids, you know, be who they really are. You know, have some sense of ownership and personal autonomy, And so where do you get a sense of where this, because we know these ideas aren't, you know, Oklahoma born, right? You know, what's kind of the genesis of the attack on our trans Oklahomans?
Yeah, we are seeing similar bills filed all across the country. I think my last count as of early last week was across all of the state legislatures that have legislation being filed right now, there were already well over 200 bills filed targeting trans people in particular. And it's not new. We've seen smaller waves of this before. I think of things like the fight around sort of single-sex bathroom restrictions that we saw in North Carolina, that we then saw repeated for schools in Oklahoma last year. But I think so much of it is based in like trans misogyny specifically. And so these, I think, really archaic ideas of womanhood and what it is to be a woman, and this sort of white Christian nationalist, like, a need to protect femininity. And the goal of womanhood being to reproduce.
Birth children and reproduce the state. I mean, like, and, in a nutshell, right?
Yeah. And so trans women disrupt that idea. And even though trans men and transgender nonconforming and trans non-binary people are also impacted by this legislation, so much of who becomes sort of the target of the vitriol here, time and time again, is trans women and girls.
I think we're just shaking our heads here, trying to wrap our minds around why this is a thing, you know, why this is such a problem for these legislators who, you know, who for the most part, you know, try to portray themselves as, strict constitutionalists who, who are into individual liberties and, you know, get the government's hands off, you know, everything that I want them to get the government's hands off of. But, you know, local control is sacrosanct, blah, 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 until it's not. And, you know, trying to really understand what's going on here is very difficult, I think, for most people. And trying to figure out how to stop this kind of nonsense is another problem that I think sane people have.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it is certainly hard as we face the session ahead to know that if right now any of these bills went on to the floor to a vote, what we can anticipate is a vote along party lines, if that, which means these bills pass with a supermajority, and that trans people immediately, because usually emergency is attached, lose access to necessary life-saving care. And I think that part of what we're really trying to do and where we're trying to engage people is to make sure that people outside of and beyond the transgender community and families of transgender people feel the urgency of this fight. I think that a lot during the last year, we kind of heard people suggest that maybe they would get involved sort of if it got worse. But we saw it get to worst and life-threatening for trans young people with SB3XX, and we still didn't see a lot of people beyond the trans community show up. And I think that some of it is rooted in this misunderstanding, even in progressive spaces, or not really being engaged with trans folks. And some of it's even rooted in this like idea that to be trans in and of itself is almost miserable, right? That we so often hear all of these statistics about disproportionately high rates of suicidality that trans people face. We hear about disproportionately high rates of violence and harm, struggles with everything from accessing housing to employment, with any sort of protections. And I think it creates this kind of myth for people who don't realize that they know trans people, that to be trans is to just barely survive at all times, when the reality is that even in the face of this arbitrary and targeted harm, trans people have always existed and have always had rich and beautiful communities and joyful lives, and found joy even in moments of struggle, and that joy and those lives are very much worth protecting, and we need everyone to really shift power in this moment, and let people in the legislature know that it's unacceptable to move this legislation.
Are these bills, that the 200 plus that you mentioned, are they scattered across the country, or is this primarily a Southern sort of thing?
They are happening across the country. I think that there are maybe a handful, probably less than 10 states, if that have not seen anti-trans legislation in the last few years. Though the South definitely tends to be sort of the space, and including Oklahoma in that. I know that regionally we're always difficult to classify, right. But in this trend, sort of across the South seems to be the spaces where we are seeing the most number of these bills filed and the most harmful. So all of the places that have past medical bans specifically being really targeted in the Southern space, Arkansas being the first of those, and litigation is ongoing there. But that even as this trend happens across the country, that Oklahoma and Texas and Alabama and Arkansas and Florida sort of especially seem to be pushing the limits even of where other states are willing to go and how much they're trying to harm trans people.
So, I mean, I don't want to be hopeless going into session. You know, just at first I was thinking, well, maybe these bills won't even make it to committee hearing. But then, you know, the way that they introduced the bill in special session, you know, I mean, they will pull shenanigans for legislation like this to pass. Oh boy. So what can we hope for? What can we, you know, what good trouble can we make in the coming weeks to help with this?
Yeah, I think it's gonna take people being loud and engaged from the get-go to let their legislators know that they're paying attention and that they don't want to see this legislation move. I think it's going to be following the lead of trans people in a lot of spaces. There's a group of trans young people who are organizing sort of a rally in support of trans lives on the first day of session for State of the State. Freedom Oklahoma is working along with some other organizations to try to organize some space early on in session to create sort of a people's hearing, since the legislature has largely pushed public testimony out of the process, to make sure that the voices of trans and queer people can be heard in the building, even if we're not invited by legislators to share on the record. And that I think it's just gonna take a lot of community support too, sort of outside and beyond those legislative spaces, because I know I've spent the past few months, since special session especially, talking to so many parents of trans kids who are having a really hard time, who are going up to the legislature once a week and talking to legislators about how they want the same thing that most legislators want for their kids, which is for them to be safe and healthy and happy. And that is really difficult because of legislation that has been passed in the last few years when their kids are forced to use single-sex bathroom stalls that are in a nurse's office and aren't accessible 3 hours of the day. When their kid can't play sports as themselves on a school sports team. And now when they fear that even though they found care outside of Roy G. Biv, that at some point they may not be able to get care in the state at all. And that they could even be criminalized for trying to take their kid out of state. And so we have a community who is rightfully really afraid and who need everyone to kind of step up and step in and show some solidarity. I think about even as we gathered for Trans Day of Remembrance, which is an annual space to recognize all of the trans people we've lost, especially from targeted anti-transgender violence over the course of the last year. It was the day after the shooting in Colorado Springs. And for a lot of our trans siblings in Tahlequah and Tulsa, who knew one of the trans people who was killed there, it all felt just especially real and tough to know that even in these places that felt somewhat safer, there isn't really safety for trans people right now. And so I think that it's going to be making some noise at the legislature, but it's also going to need to be finding some space to show up for trans community and families of trans people to make sure that they feel some of that solidarity and support. Because if there are cisgender people who are having trouble finding hope about the state of anti-trans legislation, it is all the worse for trans people.
Marianne, I think you're muted.
Sorry, the dogs are barking. Yes. No, I absolutely. I mean, there's no way. But you know, I had completely forgotten about the attestation that you have to sign for your kids to compete, you know, in athletics or school, you know. And I mean, when this was the first year for that. And so when all of our kids' friends were like, for the first time having to take care of this, everyone was like, what the fuck is this? You know, it was just like I think it's really those moments of inconvenience really for, you know, families like ours that you know, like, Jesus, you know, that, and I don't know if, I don't know if it's just going to be more of that, that somehow touches, you know, non-trans communities, non-trans families and stuff, to really just come awake with like, this is such bullshit. And it's just a minor inconvenience for us, right? Like, it's just a matter of having our pediatrician sign something, right? It's not like a threat to their life. And I do understand what that is. You know, I very much understand child loss and fear of child loss. And so, but having said that, it's just the reality of it's not just an inconvenience in someone's day-to-day life. It's an actual threat to their lives. You know, you would think that's something that all Oklahoma parents could be on board with. But I remember, you know, we've just heard all the rhetoric come out of the legislature for God knows how long, at least the past 10 years, you know, degrading women just because of, you know, the fact that they're women, that we're hosts, that whatnot. So there's gender is not something we should rely upon for people to like kind of snap to their senses and be like, oh, we shouldn't do that. Right.
Yeah. And I think very much related to that, like the other thing I want people to remember is that for our community right now, it is not just sort of the question of what we have to fight in the legislature, like what language gets filed in sort of this final week and what actually makes it into committee and onto the floor. But it's also watching what's coming out of Ryan Walters' administration at the State Department of Education, that his first meeting in that role is scheduled for the 26th of January, and that there are a lot of trans people watching that too, because the reason that Senate Bill 615, which is a bill that was shucked a few times and ultimately became single-sex bathroom restrictions and changing room restrictions for Oklahoma schools, is because Ryan Walters made it an issue last year. He found a policy that had been in place at Stillwater Public Schools since 2015 without any incident. And he pointed to that in a car rant. And all of a sudden, this policy that had never caused any issue and that was affirming and supported trans young people in Stillwater schools was under attack, and it became impossible for their school board to have any sort of real meeting without just all of this disruption of people that had driven in from Oklahoma City and other places to suggest that if the school board didn't do something, that they would come and attack trans kids in bathrooms on the school campus. And I think about that even as I spent last week with some of the students in the Stillwater Gender and Sexuality Alliance, and they're fired up about where they can engage in advocacy, which I really love, and it gives me so much hope. And I just also think about the weight of what they carried in becoming the targets of someone with so much more power than they have. And so as we're watching the legislature, we are also going to have to watch our state superintendent and our state board of education to see if there's additional policies that are targeting trans young people coming out of that space.
Well, you just made me realize too, that he could really do some damage just with administrative rules, you know, State Department of Ed. I mean, just the crap that he could pass that way, because there's no way the legislature would, you know, disapprove his roles, I'm guessing too. So just the minutia of what is inflicted upon our school districts.
Well, and if you think about the state board that's been appointed and the changes there's no doubt that there's no firewall there. Nobody who would push back and say, let's think this through, you know, what's the reason behind this? And so it's all just going to be rubber stamp, it looks like to me. Of course, from where I sit, it appears to me that, I mean, this sends a terrible message to the rest of the country and the rest of the world about what Oklahoma values are, you know, what the Oklahoma standard, we like to talk about the Oklahoma standard. And I'm afraid with our legislature these days, this is the Oklahoma standard, this sort of, you know, create a boogeyman, create fear, whip up fear. But I think long-term it's not only a losing strategy politically for those who push these things, but I think it's a losing strategy for Oklahoma to become all that it can be, because you're not going to find people, a lot of people who want to move here and live here and want to be a part of something that they think is sort of ugly and nasty and full of fear mongering. Am I off base on that? I think generationally speaking, there's probably a huge gulf between the 65 and up crowd and those who are 35 and younger, probably.
I have a high schooler. So, you know, their realities are the way they see the world, the way they experience the world, the way they don't judge things it's just a sea change from what it was just when I was in high school, you know, over 25 years ago. So, I mean, I think this is the clock may eventually run out, you know, on the capabilities to do these sorts of things.
So much damage though that can be done.
I know, it's like, I mean, it could be generational harm, you know, but at the same time, it's just, you know, my kids and their friends and just the way they view the world is completely counter to, you know, the legislation that's passing. And so
is that the one thing, Nicole, that maybe could turn some thinking on all this? I mean, all we ever hear out of Governor Stitt is top 10 state and Oklahoma's open for business and we want to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we're attractive. We have the most business friendly climate. Well, no, not really. Not when you're doing stuff like this.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an argument that we've made, and it's not one that seemingly moved legislators at all last year. And I don't know if it's going to take some real economic impact for them to actually consider the long-term ramifications of this, but I have to imagine that it's going to be difficult to recruit businesses here increasingly when this is the environment that they're in. And I think even, you know, so many legislators don't engage with their trans constituents. And so they don't think of the fact that there are trans small business owners and there are parents of trans kids who are business owners and who are driving development in the state who are thinking about leaving now. Not only the, will we be able to recruit people here, but can we keep people here who are doing a lot of great change making on the ground now? And I'm really sad about a future where we potentially lose those folks. And I don't knock anyone for leaving the state, especially to help survive or help their kids survive, or get access to needed best practice medical care that they potentially couldn't get here. But I think about like all of the layers of that too. So if we have this ban on best practice medical care that likely includes all minors and potentially some level of older trans people, what does that mean for our ability to recruit and retain pediatricians? There are a lot of providers at Roy G. Biv who are thinking about, okay, if we can't provide this care, can I in good faith stay in practice in the state, knowing that if I have a trans patient, I potentially could be banned from providing them with life-saving care.
Or criminalized for providing them safety.
Yeah. And so if we, you know, if our already crumbling medical infrastructure continues to crumble and we don't have good health care, right? Like that's another thing that might drive away more people who weren't outright driven by just the bans themselves, but who don't feel like they can come invest in a state where their employees can't get access to basic care, their employees' families can't, or where their public schools are facing funding loss because they didn't implement one of these policies to the level of severity that the State Board of Education deemed correct. Or we see more teachers leave the state because they don't want to have to enforce these really harmful policies. Like there are just so many layers to it that I think really puts us in a place for a lot of terrible outcomes that are going to hurt so many people beyond just our trans community.
You know, I mean, I can tell you that in higher ed, just, you know, which you don't normally hire from in-state with higher ed, you know, recruiting folks to come here, the trans legislation is just one facet of so many detrimental policies and, you know, laws that have been passed in this state that, you know, higher ed is going to have, and we're going to have such a hard time retaining and recruiting talent in the ways that higher ed is supposed to. And that's just one part, you know, of our highly skilled labor force, right? Because, I mean, the state administration has not seen a flood of new companies relocating to the state. They've just been these kind of charlatan, you know, companies, these like the canoes of the world, right? That's really all we've seen since he's been in office. You know, and I will always bring this up because when I was in downtown Dallas in October and they have, you know, they had a dozen high rises going up downtown Dallas, and you see nothing even close to that here, you know, in the state of Oklahoma. Texas is barely, if not at all, better than us in terms of their social policies. But at the same time, you just don't see that trickle, you know, that river of new businesses coming to the state. I don't think you're going to be able to get new talent for all the, you know, the existing, you know, business infrastructure, higher education. So, I mean, we may be lucky to retain what we have, because it's just, I mean, the fact is once you have kids, the calculus changes so much when you take jobs, right? Like where you move, where you live, that completely matters, and you want what's best for your kids. And I don't think they at all think about that, you know, like, I mean, and for those of us who have kids here now, like if my kids go out of state and never return, that I don't blame them one bit, because I mean, I know my 15-year-old sees the disrespect, you know, to those in her community, and those are her friends. And she, I mean, if they don't stand for it, that's more power to her if she decides to leave the state, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, one day I'll be crusty and old, and I'm already kind of crusty and already kind of old, but you know, I just, Nicole, I just want to make sure that we, you know, what tools we have. Do you have dates for some of the events that you've talked about yet? And if you don't, if you can make sure to share those with us, because that might be a good day to take some PTO and show up at the Capitol.
Yeah. We're still working on finalizing a date for sort of a people's hearing. But I can absolutely share that as soon as we do, and it'll go live across Freedom Oklahoma platforms. The legislature officially is in session February 6th, mm-hmm. That Monday, first state of the state. And there will be sort of people rallying in trans lives at the Capitol that day for anyone who wants to show up there. And a few other things, Freedom Oklahoma, throughout February, we do Youth Advocacy Month, which is focused on young 2S LGBTQ plus people, but involves advocacy tools that anyone can kind of use in their toolkit, whether these fights are happening at a sort of, you know, hyper-local school board level or at the state legislature. And so that toolkit will be live. And once we get through the language deadline and we've parsed through all of the bills and have a sort of final count of bills that impact 2S LGBTQ plus people, Freedom Oklahoma will have a public-facing legislative tracker live again that we'll share out on social media and our website so that people can follow along as much as possible with what we're tracking and what we think the impact of those bills could be if they move, so that they've got an idea of where to engage in those fights.
So it's usually around the 17th that they...
The 19th at 4 p.m. is the language deadline for bills. And so I assume that the evening of the 19th and all day the 20th and maybe into that weekend, depending on how many we have this year, that is
maybe nerd heaven. So what are some of the titles that these bills are usually, and we're going to get wonky here for a minute, some of the titles that these are filed under if we want to do, you know, title searches and stuff like that once the legislation is filed?
Trying to think, like we've got a lot of like acts relating to schools.
Okay. Because I mean, the way they kind of go after it, the way they really parse it, you know, I mean, that's when it, you may look at it and, you know, Common Ed, or you could look, try and look at it under those titles, and it's just, there's no guarantee the way they stick these wherever they can find them.
Yeah. They're a little bit all over the place right now. But we'll definitely get those live. I'm just trying to think that I don't think there's even any consistency, even in the healthcare bans necessarily entitled. We've just seen so many attempts to disrupt the way they're doing this, and whether it's criminalization or not depends on what title, right? And so we've seen a bit of everything, and we'll read through all of the bills so that we try to catch all of those. We do lots of keyword searches too around gender and sexuality and transgender and bathrooms and ban and library and all of the things that we can think of that have been targets in the last several years, pronouns, gender markers, because we're also seeing additional legislation in that space. And then we'll just work our way to being extra thorough in reading bills from the people who've kind of been the biggest
frequent offenders. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who pushed this more so than anyone else.
Well, it seems like Warren Hamilton's kind of joining the ranks as well, not just Senator Bullard, just Dom.
Well, I am wondering about Bullard's bill that sets the age at 26, and whether you've seen that elsewhere in the country, number one, and number two, I mean, how can you even with a straight face make that argument? I guess you could argue for somebody under 21, maybe if you're trying to figure out a way to advance something like that. But once you reach 21, I don't understand. Is that even constitutional? I wonder.
Yeah. My understanding that that is the first of its kind to see an age this high. And the thing that we keep trying to remind people, especially as we expect a few more healthcare bans to be filed in the next few days, is that there's not any age where it is acceptable to ban best practice care for trans young people. Mm-hmm. And we don't want people to get too caught up on any given age, because it's very likely, right, that the Senate moves a ban that's 21 and under or 18 and under and says, look, this is a compromise because it's not 26 and under. Senator Bullard is pushing sort of this line that it's based on frontal lobe development.
I was wondering also, if that was it. I was wondering if that's what it was. Okay.
Something he has not mentioned, but something that a lot of trans people especially are thinking about, is that it's also the age that people are kicked off parental health care. There's a lot of, concern about that, especially when we think about sort of how hard it can be, especially without any employment protections in a state like Oklahoma, for transgender people to make a living wage and have a job as themselves. I think that there isn't any good argument for any of these ages, especially when what the policy does is says medical providers cannot provide care in line with best practices for their patients. But that something like Senate Bill 129, this bill by Bullard, is just an example of how far they are willing to sort of push the envelope here to hurt as many trans people as possible. And to also make a larger number of doctors afraid to provide this care.
Well, and perhaps the most depressing thing about it is looking at his bio, and he taught advanced AP US history, AP government, and the US Constitution as a teacher. And it's just.
Yeah, I think it's been so hard, because several of the people who've pushed policies that are content restrictions or potential sort of criminalization of 2SLGBTQ+ materials in libraries under the obscenity statute, or these healthcare bans, or these single sex bathroom restrictions, are people who are former educators and principals. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really harmful and a really scary thing. And it is also something that rings true for a lot of the education experience for a lot of 2SLGBTQ+ people in Oklahoma.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, like, just speaks to their vulnerability at school, you try and make it better. Michael Bergstrom's another one. He was a high school English teacher, and that just kills me, because my English teachers were my saving grace growing up. And I was like, oh God, like.
And let's not forget Ryan Walters.
That man. Yeah, I mean, it's just, oh gosh, if it's just at all a snapshot of what kids go through, through the adults that they're around, not necessarily their peers. My kids are someone got hurt upstairs. Everything's okay, but anyway, sorry, had to pause, make sure. make sure there wasn't too much complaining. But well, is there anything else that you think we should know going into session and bail filing before you start carb loading in preparation for the all-nighters the next couple days?
Yeah, I think it's just going to be the reminder that trans young people sort of especially are the target. Mm-hmm. And that means that not only are we going to see more legislation targeting trans young people themselves, but also anyone who may be affirming to them, that there's a lot of concern about criminalization of parents and educators and medical providers, and what we're going to see there. That we saw some really scary legislation that would have criminalized people under the obscenity statute for checking out or lending books with sort of depictions of 2S LGBTQ plus sexuality last year that only didn't get passed because of sort of timeline. That there's a lot of scary things that we're fighting, that there aren't any appropriate ages for these bans, that some trans people know who they are from the very beginning of their childhood and some don't, and the entire transgender experience is valid and it is important for people to be affirmed and safe and have access to care in their school space, in their healthcare space, and in their home life. And that what we're going to see a lot of in the next few weeks, especially, I think, is this continued effort to suggest that fair and balanced news means giving a platform to the people who are pushing these anti-transgender laws. And that we know even that news coverage is really harmful to the emotional health of trans people of all ages. And so that it's really a moment too that we're gonna need our community to rally around and be proactively affirming in any way people have capacity to.
Well, I don't know. Do you have anything else, Arnold? Because no, I mean, this is
we're in for a fight, I would say. This session.
Sorry, I'm just looking at all the senators, and it's just making my blood boil. So I'm gonna stop. Well, we really appreciate your time today. Sorry, Arnold. I didn't know if you were.
We all have to stay healthy to be able to make sure our voices are heard on this crazy town stuff.
But we'll look forward to hearing the dates for the Freedom Oklahoma events, days of action, things that we all need to go out to show support for, our friends, our family, our community members, in the coming weeks. So. Thank you so much for your time. Safe travels.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And we're thankful for good hotel Wi-Fi for you.
Oh my gosh. Probably the best that we've dealt with in a while. So
I know. I was really worried. I was like, I've been on some really bad hotel Wi-Fi. Yeah. So
well, I'm competing with my daughters upstairs for our internet. So we're all winning today. So thank you so very much. And we will talk to you again.
If you like what you hear on ObserverCast, please tell your friends about us. Also, if you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org.
You also can support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. To help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in our 53rd year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. we have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate.
Finally, we want to thank Norman's Jared Deck for the music you're listening to today. You can download his albums at iTunes and learn more at jareddeckmusic.com.